So before I get into this episode, I'd like to bring to light something I've been working on. If you're subscribed to my blog, you've probably heard of my Hunter Up initiative. If not, I'll try to sum it up for you. I'm afraid that hunting as we know it can go away, especially with the declining numbers of new hunters each year. I think it's so very important that we take the time and make a true effort to take the bull by the horns, and each and every one of us personally introduce one new hunter into hunting. I'm also very unhappy with the hunting community as a whole, and its lack of respect for fellow hunters. We as a community spend a lot of time bashing each other over stupidity instead of promoting one another. The amount of energy that we spend arguing can be spent on more important things like conservation or introducing a kid into hunting. So I'm issuing all of you a challenge to take the time to help fellow hunters, introduce kids, and for God's sakes, stop promoting content that puts hunters in a bad light. Resist the urge to engage in these foolish arguments that we have. Stop the bashing. When you feel strongly about something or you disagree with a hunter, a fellow hunter, take that subject off social media, message that person directly, have a one-on-one debate about it. You're either going to leave understanding where that other person's coming from, or you're going to have said your piece and you move on. We're not all going to agree with the way others do things. And we don't have to. But what we should be doing is supporting all legal hunting, because all we're doing is showing weakness and unrest within our community. And this just leaves chinks in the armor that let hunting anti-hunting groups tear down what you have built, what we've all built. And we need to support hunting and hunters and use our efforts for good, like conservation and hunters education and introducing new hunters, instead of wasting our time arguing about who predator hunts, who uses a Matthews and who uses a Hoyt. I mean, the stupid arguments that go on is just, it's okay to have debate, it's okay to have opinion, but really think about what it does when you argue on social media. You got to understand, if there's something that's negative out there and you keep pushing it, I can't stress enough, if you don't understand the way Facebook algorithm works or Instagram or any of these, it's you comment on something, oh, you're an idiot for putting that out there. And you commenting on that just pushes that content up the ladder further and further until it gets wider and wider and the net gets larger and larger. And the more people can see it, the more people comment on it, the more people can see it. And eventually it's going to get in front of the eyes of somebody who's an anti-hunter and not just arguing about the hunt. And it's not good for us. So please, stop the bashing and, get out there and help introduce hunters into hunting. Thanks again. And this episode, you can thank Phoenix Shooting Bags for bringing it to you. And this hunter initiative, they're helping me out with it. I appreciate what they're doing. And let's just jump into the next episode. Thank you. Hi, welcome to the Interviews with the Hunting Masters, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. And today we're going to talk to Jerry Bethge. And Jerry is an outdoor writer. He's an editor for Outdoor Life. Just a all around good hunter. Matter of fact, how I found out about him many years ago, I read a book that he co-authored on elk hunting with Bob Robb. And I I know he's a hell of a turkey hunter and passionate turkey hunter. So I'm having, I have him on today to talk a little bit about turkey hunting, since turkey hunting's in full swing in most states and or just about to start. How you doing today?
I'm doing great, John. Thank you. So you're calling me old? Is that what you're saying?
No. Yes. A little bit. No. No. Definitely not. And I say many years ago, but not that many years ago, was it? 10, 12 years ago. What, when did that book come out? Do you remember?
I don't even recall when that book came out. I can tell you this, though.
I think I have it right here.
I actually started at Outdoor Life in 1984.
Oh, wow.
To give you an idea of how long I've been doing this.
Yeah, so there's the book right there that my children managed to write all over the cover.
There you go.
Let's see. When did this book publish? This book was published in 2000. So, I mean, okay. Yeah, it was 18 years ago. And I've owned it for, I think I got it in 2001 or 2002.
How come it's not all dog-eared and everything, John?
It is a little bit. You see that?
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Look, there's a couple of pages.
There you go. Okay. I take that back.
Yeah, it was actually the first elk hunting book I ever read. I did a lot of, I was lucky enough to hunt with guys who were really, really good elk hunters when I first started off. So this is one of the few animals I didn't really have to self-teach myself on. Like I did with a lot of the animals that I hunt now. So,
gotcha.
But it was a good book, and that's why I held on to it. It had a lot of good solid information in there, especially for people that kind of just starting out and
sweet,
you know, needed awesome. A direction. So we have you on today about talking turkey,
which is actually my favorite subject. So, I think every once in a while, someone will ask me, if there's one thing that you want to do, you know, if they made you pick one thing for the rest of your life to do, mm-hmm. hunting and fishing wise, what would it be? And it would be turkey hunting. I mean, I love to turkey hunt more than anything else. And I not so much, you know, necessarily for me to shoot a turkey, but mm-hmm. many times during the course of the season, I don't even take a gun with me. I just, yeah. enjoy taking people out. My daughter now is 25. She's shot 3 turkeys. I enjoy taking her out. This coming Saturday, in 2 days, is youth season.
Okay.
And I'm going to take a kid out who's 12 years old, and hopefully he'll shoot a turkey. We'll see. I mean, it's just so much fun. It's so enjoyable to me.
Sweet. So invitation accepted. I'm coming.
There you go. There
you go. I actually want to take my daughter turkey hunting, but I can't legally take her here yet because she's only 9, and she has to be 10.
So what I did with my daughter when she was very young, what makes it so much, you know, more interesting, especially for kids, I've found, is that, you know, there's a dialogue between you and the bird, right? So mm-hmm. I took her deer hunting many times. And you're sitting in a tree stand
and you're waiting
and there's nothing happening and you know, you're not seeing anything. And if you're fishing, you're casting and you're not catching anything, but then there's turkeys, you know, and you know, just before the season starts, the birds are very vocal mm-hmm. during the season. Obviously they're very vocal and there's that interaction between you and the bird. And that seems to really get the kids' attention.
Right.
And that's why I really think it's a great place to start kids off if you want to get them into hunting.
Right.
Because of that. And what I used to do is take her out, you know, beginning, you know, mid-April, right around this late April, but in mid-April, and we'd go scouting. And I'd try to make it an adventure for her. I would hot chocolate, snacks, all right. that sort of stuff. And we would go and check all these turkey spots, and it would not be a hardcore thing. It would be just an enjoyable morning in the woods. And if she got cold, we went back to the truck and had some hot chocolate and some snacks. And if we got a bird, goblin horde would sit there and call them in,
Right.
because lots of times they're very easy to call in early in the season. And she got to see this big, giant, goofy bird, doing his thing, and it really turns him on to hunting. That's what I've found anyway. So.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's you brought up two points that are like I think are crucial to getting kids into hunting. And that's one, having early success. Or and that success is even just calling in a bird, seeing things, having action, having the interaction. And two, making it comfortable. You know,
Right. Yep.
they're not at that point yet. They're so driven that they'll sit through, you know, side pouring rain and you know, below zero temps and climb up crazy mountains and all that stuff like where you're willing to do once you develop a passion for it. So, you know, the snacks and making it comfortable and pleasurable and making it, you know, at their level is key, 'cause there's so many guys that they'll like, oh, come on, man. You know, if you want to be a big hunter, you gotta do this, you gotta do that. And you know, some kids, it'll work with them because they got that mentality or they've been pushed that way their whole lives, maybe. But for the most part, I think that just turns people off of it. I know as a child myself, when I used to love going bird hunting with my dad. I loved going pheasant hunting and quail and all that stuff. But deer hunting, not as much. And that
Right.
because I feel like I got ruined early on sitting freezing my ass off, you know,
Totally.
in an orange suit underneath a tree, you know,
Yep.
in the snow upstate New York. And it's like, you know, it's like, yeah.
I couldn't agree with you more. I'll share with you my first turkey story, if you'll listen to it. Okay,
Absolutely.
so I started at Outdoor Life in 1984, and in the Northeast, turkeys were, many states were not even open yet because the birds had just recently been transplanted. And there was no tradition of turkey hunting in the Northeast. So one of the guys, Michael Pierce, who was one of my freelance writers from Kansas, said, "You need to go turkey hunting because you don't know what you're missing." And I said to him, I said, "Mike, I'd rather bow hunt white-tailed deer more than anything else." I said, "I cannot possibly imagine anything taking the place of deer hunting." And he kept telling me, he's like, "Just come out to the Midwest." He said, "Just give me one spring." So the next year, and I guess it was 85, I guess, and Ray I, who is World Turkey Calling Champion 100 times over, and Michael invited me to hunt Missouri, and we went to Missouri, and I'll never forget the first morning I was there. I had no idea what I was in for, okay, because again, we didn't have this tradition of turkey hunting in the Northeast.
Right.
And I get out there the first morning, and I hear this bird gobble, and I was done. I was completely done, and it changed my hunting forever. And spent a week out there and never shot a turkey. But it was, I knew that it was like everything had changed. So
Yeah.
during the course of that summer, I said to Ray, and Ray and I kept a close relationship, and I would talk to him on the phone, and I said, "Okay, hot shot, you can call turkeys in Missouri and Kansas in places where there are turkeys, but there's no way that you can come up to the Northeast and call in turkeys in Western Massachusetts where there are no turkeys."
Right.
There was a season, and I was overstating it, obviously.
Right.
So he said, he goes, "I will be there next spring." So the next spring he came out, and again, I think it was only like our fourth like season ever in Massachusetts. And we went, Ray came up, and it was myself and Ray and one of the other editors, Ralph Stewart. And we went out and shot three turkeys. And we shot them within a mile of the house. There was nobody else turkey hunting.
Yeah.
We had the woods to ourselves, and Ray called in. What happened is he called in my first bird, and I shot it, and I was actually, you know, like back, no, there were no, you know, specific turkey guns back then, right? So I was just using my deer gun, which was an old Savage with a high comb, and the turkey came in at a really weird angle, and I shot him, and of course, the recoil bloodied my nose, and I was bleeding all over the leaves in the woods, and finally got the bleeding stopped, the turkey stopped flopping and all that, and I just sat there in disbelief. I had shot my first turkey, and I shot it literally within a mile of my house.
Wow.
And I said, well, Ray, let's go. And this was just after first light. And I said, let's go back to the house. And he said something to me that I'll never forget. He said, you need to walk out of here with that turkey over your shoulder by yourself. And he goes, I'll meet you at the house later. And it was just like a stirring moment, you know, it was just very cool. Of course, unbeknownst to me, he had heard another bird gobbling on a distant hill. So he was back at the house an hour after I was, and he had shot a turkey.
Nice.
And then Ralph Stewart, he and Ralph got into a bird the very next morning, and we had three birds. And that was only, it's like the fourth season that it was ever open.
You know,
up in the Northeast in Massachusetts. So it changed my life forever, like I said. I'm ruined, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, turkey hunting can be addicting. Yeah. Some people agree with me and then some people scoff at me. It kind of reminds me a lot of elk hunting. That same running gun feel, you know, the setups and whatever. Mind you, I do like elk hunting a lot better than turkey hunting. And I don't do a whole lot of turkey hunting anymore, mainly because I hunt so much during the fall and winter that if I went hunting in the spring too, my wife would leave me with a gardener. So, you know, it's like, I still have to pick and choose my battles. So unfortunately however, she does like going turkey hunting, and we were just talking about it, going to try, cause we have an over the counter archery tag, for a couple units here during the spring. So we might go try our hand at that. She likes turkey hunting. She likes anything that's proactive. She can't stand standing and, you know, sitting
well,
in a tree
there you
stand.
Go. See, that's, and that's the other thing with taking kids or, you know, newcomers to the sport. It's not like you have to sit like a statue for 5 hours, you know?
Right.
I mean, you're moving around, you're checking different spots and that sort of thing. So, and that's what I've found anyway, so.
No, I think it's a definite good gateway drug for the sport.
That's an interesting way to think about it. I agree with you.
So, let's talk a little bit about some tactics and stuff. So, you know, if you're going to a new area, how do you locate birds? What's your approach? What do you do to choose your spot, you know, to go hunting?
So, you know, it's interesting, and it's really changed and shifted in just the last 5 years about how we approach that sort of thing, which makes this, to me, makes it very topical. So we have one goal in mind, and so I have a crew that comes and hunts with me, and they have been coming since 1987. And actually, I've been texting with them all day. Again, this is a Thursday, and the season opens Monday. And those guys have made the trek from Buffalo to New England for the last 20-something years to spend this week hunting turkeys, because we all take this week off to hunt turkeys.
Cool.
And the goal preseason is to try to locate as many adult birds as we possibly can. So that we have our first choice of bird to hunt on the opening morning. And when that goes bad, which it usually does, we have got backup birds to hunt. So by the time opening morning comes, we'll probably have located, say, 10 adult gobblers. And I don't have any problem with shooting jakes, but we just don't do that. So we try to shoot adults, and we'll have at least 10 adult birds located before the opening morning. So how do you do that, right? So one thing you don't do is listen to your deer hunting buddies, because what they will do is they'll say, you need to check out this spot because it's loaded with turkeys. And then you ask them, how do you know it's loaded with turkeys? I was deer hunting this past year and there were 20, 30 turkeys come by my stand every morning. That's old information and it's not any good. Those were flocked up birds that were in fall flocks that were on a food source, and they probably won't be there in the spring. It's possible they could be there, and if you have no place to go, it may be worth checking out. But I've found that 80% of the time, those are dead end tips. The other thing is, when a guy goes deer hunting, lots of times he'll hunt 10, 15 acres. That's just not enough room, typically, to spring turkey hunt. You need a little bit more room. So what you have to do is you really have to find the information that is as close to opening day as you possibly can. There's a lot, and there's very cool and some new ways to do that, right? So old school way, and this totally works, is especially in semi-rural areas, you talk to the UPS guy. Or you talk to the mail carrier. You know, like in rural areas, they deliver the mail to your mailbox via a car and it's or a truck, and it's done in the morning. Stop those people, get to know those people, and ask them, hey, you know, ask them for the intel. You've been seeing any turkeys? Where have you been seeing them? You know, 9 times out of 10, they'll tell you. And they really have very like up to the minute information. Now, don't ask them a month before the season opens, right? So those birds will still be in a winter flock. You want it like 2 weeks before the season opens, just after spring breakup, when those birds are out of the flocks and have dispersed. And ask them where they've seen them cross the roads. And, you know, unless they're turkey hunters, they'll tell you. That, so once you have that information, the other thing we use, we've used a lot lately, especially in the last few years, are apps. Both Scout Look and Onyx have worked the best for us. So, you know, you download the app on your phone, and they work even if you don't have cell service. And they and both of those have property lines now. So we hunt in the Northeast, and we're not hunting big farms and expanses of, you know, farm areas. We're hunting smaller woodlots, so we kind of need to know where the property lines are. Those apps also give you the names of the property owners. So what you can do, if you hear a gobbler on Mr. Smith's property, you can try to reach out to Mr. Smith via county tax records, try to get his, you know, first knock on his door and see if he's there, or try to get his phone number, you know, through county tax records, or try to friend him on Facebook. And that is a great way to get, you know, hunting permission on a piece of property. And it and we've done that innumerable times, and it's worked out pretty well.
I've done it
Again,
myself.
I mean, we try to hunt public land, and there's a lot of birds on public land, but you know, and all the private land is, it's just in very small lots. So we try to, you know, get a hold of the landowner, and most of them are, if you're nice to them, if you're polite, if you take your kid with you, and say, we're looking for a place to hunt turkeys. Would you give us permission? And lots of times they will absolutely give you permission.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, we, you know, and this may sound like skullduggery, right? But I also try to monitor Facebook for posts that people in my area have put up. Now, they may not care about turkeys and they may never post anything about turkeys, but sometimes they might.
Right.
And while they're headed to work in the morning, they'll post a photograph of a big old gobbler. Hey, look what I saw in my backyard today. And then you can talk to them via Facebook and try to get permission to hunt. Now, the only way we can hunt private land where we are is by permission only. So you
Right.
actually need written permission to do it, which always complicates things. But we've found that if a polite request is typically works. Typically
Right.
works pretty good. So once we've got that part taken care of, right? We have a place to go. We try to hit like in the last so this winter has been terrible up here in the Northeast, right? We've had some, it's been bad in a lot of places, but in the Northeast it's been bad. These turkeys have been flocked up, so they're just starting to act like turkeys. And this has happened like in the last week. So 2 weeks ago, I checked some of the spots that I have permission to hunt on and never heard a bird, never saw a bird. And just starting on Sunday, temperatures started going into the 60s during the course of the day. My buddy has been checking spots, and the birds are suddenly everywhere, and they're acting like turkeys.
Okay.
So as you get closer to season, you really, I cannot emphasize scouting anymore. You really need to scout. Otherwise, you're just flying blind.
Right.
And so we disperse over these spots and we try to be sure that we're there at like first light and then last light. Of course, we'll call in those spots during the course of the day too, but especially first and last light, and just try to hear birds gobble.
Find them the
And then
find them in the roost,
take it from
maybe.
there. But scouting is critical.
Are you looking for them in the roost or?
It's interesting because a lot of people don't roost turkeys anymore, which is odd to me. I mean, I've always been a big believer in that. It's how it gives you a head start the next morning, right? But we never see anybody roosting turkeys, and I don't understand that.
Yeah, that's the only way I've ever hunted them, so.
I know, but the way it is anymore, and I don't know if, the way the economy is, people work odd hours and jobs and things like that and just don't have as much time anymore, obviously. But we always try to roost, especially the night before we hunt, but we certainly roost when we're scouting too.
Yeah. Okay.
And you just try to find out where they're roosting. And before the season opens, try not to call to them too much. Some people say it makes them call shy.
Yeah.
And Ray Eye has made me a big believer, and that's completely not true. Turkey's going to act like a turkey, and unless he's been stepped on numerous times by a hunter, he's not going to be call shy. It all
Right.
depends on where his testosterone level is at,
Makes
but
sense.
we just try to listen for him, most importantly. And if we don't hear him, we'll call at him for sure, just to locate him.
Right.
But again, I can't over emphasize scouting. It's so critically important.
What I want to go back to roosting for a second. What are some of the things how do you when you go to roost birds, what do you do? What's your plan of attack?
Depends on what time it is, okay? In terms of when the sun goes down.
Okay.
And the reason I say that is because that last 45 minutes of daylight are your prime times to hear birds in a roost. And what I find, what we all do, the guys who I hunt with at my camp, we find ourselves trying to hit as many locations where we've seen or heard birds before, װ      װ     װ     װ     װ     װ││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││（││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││││ within that last window of opportunity before they quit gobbling for the night. And what we'll do is, if it's still pretty light, we'll use a boat paddle box call, and we'll start out with an owl hoot first. But
right.
If it's still pretty light, they oftentimes won't gobble to an owl hoot. So we'll go to a boat paddle box call, and cut at them.
Okay.
As it gets a little bit later and we're checking different spots, it's getting a little darker. Then we'll pretty much owl hoot at them most of the time. Okay. And that's really our routine. If it's very windy, which always is the worst condition is right. Wind, obviously, right? We have these big boat paddle box calls, by the way, if you're not familiar, are just big, long, giant box calls, right? So
right.
So here's a little tiny box call. A boat paddle would be like twice the size. So
big.
We have another one that is about three times the size of this small box call.
Okay.
And we call it the road warrior. And everyone has one, and it's the most, to hear it up close, it's the most god-awful thing you ever heard in your life. You could say it sounds nothing like a turkey, but turkeys gobble to it. And it cuts through the windiest conditions.
Okay.
So I think all of us, we all have boat paddles of some sort, and we all have one of those road warriors with us too, just in case it gets windy or something.
Okay.
So that's the roosting game plan. And we, there's not a night of the season we don't roost, and we try to roost as often as we can. We're scouting too. It's just
right.
It's critically important.
Yeah. I mean, it's your starting point for the next day.
Absolutely.
I've always gotten up, went out an hour or two in the dark, and I'm not a fantastic turkey hunter by any means. So if I'm saying something you don't agree with, please let my listeners know, because I don't want to tell them something that they shouldn't know. But I always get up, like 2 hours before light, and I'm, or I shouldn't say get up. I'm out in the woods 2 hours before light, and I'm making coyote calls, whatever, just to, see if I could get one, or, shock them into gobbling or something in the tree, and, find a place to start in the morning. And the same goes for the evening. Like you were saying, putting them to roost.
There's that magic hour in there, or magic 15 minutes in there, where they won't gobble after that, because it's too dark.
Right.
And they won't gobble before that because it's too dark. And again, it's all about a turkey's testosterone level. I mean, it really is. I mean, I've had birds gobble on full moon nights. Sometimes you can get them to gobble.
I was going to say, because I've had them gobble in the middle in dark,
right.
3 o'clock in the morning.
so and those are typically shock gobbles. They're not,
yep.
They're not, mating gobbles per
right,
se.
Right, exactly.
So,
yeah, cool. What what's like the, I don't know, three or four most important turkey sounds a guy should master?
Yeah, I think, and the Outdoor Life Film Stream and the media have done a terrific job of trying to overcomplicate turkey hunting.
Yeah.
I honestly, and again, I've had the opportunity to hunt with some incredibly great turkey hunters. I mean, like the Ray Eyes, the Will Primoses, the Preston Pittmans, Dick Kirby, Chris Kirby. And I'm not saying that to gloat, but I've learned so much from them. And I think what I've learned the most is that, chill out, guys. This is not brain surgery. A turkey is going to act like a turkey. I mean, don't try to make it into something that it's not.
Right.
If a turkey hangs out there at 100 yards, it's because he has a hen. If you call to a turkey and he goes the exact opposite direction, it's because the hen has taken him in the exact opposite direction.
Right.
So if you go, if you think maybe simplistically, it'll do wonders for your turkey hunting. And like by that, I mean, so a lot of guys will not, you know, you have to mouth call a turkey, right? That's what a lot of guys think. That sets you apart from the novices out there.
Right.
I don't subscribe to that. I mean, I have mouth calls with me. I use them. This is a push button box call.
Mm-hmm.
The most simple turkey call that there is. And there are buddies of mine who would not even ever think of taking that out in the woods with them. And I can tell you that I've killed, especially in the last 10 years, I've killed more turkeys with a push button call than I have anything else. And it's very simple. You push the button and it yelps, it clucks, you know, it purrs. For some reason, it sounds like a turkey to, it sounds like a hen turkey to a gobbler.
Right.
But guys won't use it because it's beneath them to use it.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it. If there is, and I've said this over and over again to my buddies, I was like, if there's, you know, you're running out of camp in the morning, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, you're sleep deprived and all that sort of stuff, and you forget stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If there's one thing I'm going back to camp to get, it's a push button box call. I will not hunt turkeys without it. I usually take two in case you have to do some fighting purrs or something like that. It's a simple call to use. Anybody can do it. And if you're taking your kid out,
they can do it.
They can do it. And let them call the turkey. And it's just very, very, very simple. I mean, you know, it's a 7-note yelp or case closed, that's done. It sounds like a turkey. And turkeys gobble to it and they come to it and they die from it. I love it. You know, I love it. I got mouth calls and you know, all different manner of mouth calls, and I have them in my pocket. And I would say that easily 9 out of 10 turkeys that I kill or I use a push button or a straight box call. And I find that people kind of getting away from it because they think they have something to prove or they have to be cool. And that's just, I just want either myself or somebody who I'm taking to shoot a turkey and to watch the show and enjoy, you know, the spring morning out in the woods. I don't really think I need to prove anything to anybody. It's not a calling contest, you know?
No, for sure. No, I think a lot of what you were saying earlier about the roosting has to do with that same thing, that people feel like it's more challenging, or like the same reason why they won't, you know, shoot a bird that's not like coming in strutting or whatever, you know.
Well, you know, I find it, and I'm not, I've been a bow hunter my whole life, but I find it's within my realm of acquaintances, shooting a turkey with a bow has become some sort of a, you know, wondrous manly thing to do. And I frankly don't understand that. I mean, it's cool if you're really, you know, I love bow hunting. I bow hunt like crazy.
Right.
But how that sets you apart from somebody else, I don't quite get, you know. I mean, the goal is to call a bird in and shoot the bird.
Right.
You know, choose whatever you want to shoot it. But if you're doing it to try to prove your value to somebody, I just don't understand that part of it. So,
I agree.
That's just me. I don't
know. I agree with you more. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, there's a caveat to that. If you're trying to prove something to yourself, I'm okay with it.
Yes, I agree.
Because I like setting challenges and goals for myself. Yep. And, you know, it sometimes it just comes about, like, I've killed whatever, let's say 10 already now with the shotgun, and now I just want to take the next level. I want to try the next thing. Because I find that, like, for myself right now, like coyote hunting, I've been killing them with a bow, calling them in and killing them with a bow for many, many years now. But I've never done it with my recurve or a longbow. And yep. I think I keep talking myself out of it every time I go to try it, but I think I'm gonna make a conscious effort to try it because it's for me it's like the next level. I want to try the next thing.
And I'm totally so
it's
yeah.
Not to
so,
show anybody else that I'm a badass and I could do it, but
right. So before people start sending me nasty notes, I completely agree with you 1,000,000%. Yeah. And I yeah. look, I bow hunt. I bow hunt as much as the next guy. I really yeah. do. If you're doing it for the reasons that you cited, that's a different story. But that's yeah. not always what I see. That's
well, it's 100% not always what you see because social media, more than anything, has
well,
made
there
it,
you go.
Has made it a freaking competition. Everybody's competing with each other, and
right.
you know, social media has done a very good job of making people feel bad about themselves. You know, even without the bashing and all the other shit that goes on between hunters. And the putting down and everything else, just social media by itself, even if you take hunting out of the equation, just you're looking at somebody's life on social media. They're only posting the good things. They're only right. posting, oh, look at my happy kids. Look at this. Right. Look at that. Whatever. Look at my new car. Blah, blah, blah. So you only see that. And then you start looking at your own life. I'm like, oh man, so-and-so's got this and this and that. His kid never seems to be crying. He's always happy. And then you go back home and you're like, that's not my life and whatever. So
yeah,
I love social media and I hate it. I hate it more than I love it, but unfortunately it's a necessary evil nowadays, especially,
right.
especially if you're, you know, trying to promote businesses and so on and so forth. But
so let me get back to the calling part, right?
Oh yeah. Quick. Sorry. I took right. us off schedule. So,
no, you didn't. You didn't at all. You know, but in terms of, again, people overcomplicate things, right? So to kill a turkey, I feel the only calls you need to make and master are a yelp, a cut, and a cluck.
Okay.
So a yelp is, again, these are not my hunting calls, so they sound especially bad coming through a computer, okay?
Right.
But you know, it's a 7-note yelp, and that's just a hen saying, I'm here, right?
Yep.
And then a cut, which is an excited hen and one that wants to breed or one that is pissed off at another hen. And that's, I'll do it on this. That's a high pitched excited hen.
Right.
And if you follow that up with yelps, that's great. It's perfect.
Right.
And then a simple cluck, because turkeys cluck to find each other pretty much. And you'll have a hen, you know, it's so bizarre to me how turkeys oftentimes, you know, you'll start calling to a turkey from, you know, a bird that's like a mile away, and you call to it a couple times and they'll find the tree that you're sitting on.
Right, right.
That's how their directionality or whatever it is
yeah,
works.
Yeah.
But, and then, and so you cluck.
Yep.
And do that every once in a while. And that's it. And if you can do that, you'll kill a turkey. The other, only other things that I do, and again, I am not in the league of the Ray Eyes and the Eddie Salters and these guys. Scratching in the leaves is a killer technique and a killer way to kill a turkey.
Mm-hmm.
If they're out there hung up at 50 yards and they're with hens or something like that, I don't know how many turkeys we kill just by screaming. Calls won't work because they're hung up and they're with a hen. That's why they're hung right. up. And you just scratch in the leaves and it sounds like another, and it is an awesome way to kill a turkey. Try to keep your hand behind your back,
right, for the moment,
and you know, scratch in a dry leaf litter, and it's great. And the only other than that, so I've got like two desperation calls that I only if I'm have been sitting there for like 2 hours,
okay,
and a turkey's hung up, will I even bother? Fighting purrs, so I'll take two push button calls and purr with them at like basically the same time. And I'll have one in each hand and I'll just, right. and I'll purr. And we had a bird 2 years ago, one of the other editors was with me. And that's literally what we did. We had this, there were two adult gobblers and they were hung up at 70 yards and we could see them. And we literally watched them for 2 hours and they had hens with them. They had like five or six hens with them. And all they did was strut for five or six, for two or three, it was like 2 hours. Called to them with everything I knew how to call with. I took out slate call and purred at them, clucked at them, did everything, and they just weren't budging. I took out two push buttons and started doing fighting purrs, and here they come. I mean, it was like instantaneous. They turned on a dime, and here they come up the hill. Of course, he missed. But it's like the desperation thing. The other desperation call is a gobble. So I have a gobble tube I take with me, and it's like in the dark. Yeah, and it's like it's in the dark recesses of my vest because I don't often pull it out. It's like it's when you're exasperated and have nothing else. It's like I'm done. I've got nothing else. Let's see if it works.
Right.
And so I carry one of those with me too, but I don't often use it. You know, so. But if you can do that, you're done. I mean, you're good.
Yeah.
You know, a kid can call a turkey with a push button call like nothing. And I, you know, a couple of guys have said this before. It's like, you know, maybe turkeys really respond to push button calls because very few guys like to use them because it's beneath them.
It might be. Yeah, I've seen it. Like I said, I don't turkey hunt enough to have any input on that, but I've seen it with elk calls where the calls that are very popular and get overused, those are the ones that they don't come into. Like, right. For instance, the Hoochie Mama. Like, right. that got abused for how many years by every – it was a great call when it first came out, and it worked like, you know, like med. But then – now it doesn't really work that well anymore, yeah. You know? Yeah. So it's like, so that makes sense. It's just a, you know, it's a good sounding call and it's just not the same as everything else out there.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
Absolutely. No, that makes perfect sense. Well, cool. You gave me one story already. I was actually going to ask you to share with me a story, about haunting that maybe had a teaching moment for you. If you could share that with us, that would be great.
So yeah, and it was an early on teaching moment, you know, and it's one that you don't hear people talk about that often, but it's one that occurred when I was hunting with Ray. He used to come every year, and it was back in, I don't know, 85 or something like that, and it's a teaching moment and a lesson I learned way back then that every single season it'll happen. This will happen. So the place we hunted, there was a lake. And I said to Ray, I'm like, I would like for you to teach me how to use a box call. Because I'm new at this. I don't know how to, you know, I would like to, you show me how to use a box call, you know. And when you have the opportunity to hunt with, like, the legend, you know.
Right.
So you pay attention. So, again, there was a lake, and Ray says, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to circle a lake, and we're going to call every 250, 300 yards. He said, we're just going to stand next to a tree, and we're going to just call. And he said, if the place looks especially good, we may set up. If, you know, if we hear a turkey, we're going to set up. He said, but what? And he goes, I'll teach you how to use the box call. So we walked around the lake, and which took, you know, a couple hours. And we got to the end. We didn't hear a turkey the whole way. And he said, okay. He goes, I said, let's walk out of here. And he goes, well, no, we're going to go back the same exact way we came in.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, we never heard a bird. Why would we do that? And he said, you'll see. So we retraced our step and just went in the opposite direction. And we stopped in virtually the same spot on the way out as we did on the way in.
Okay.
And we heard three birds on the way out.
Ha.
Every single season, the same thing happens. We'll go to a spot where, you know, we had seen birds or heard birds or whatever, and we won't hear anything, but we'll call from there. If we don't hear anything, we'll leave to check other spots. We'll come back to that spot in an hour or 2 hours, and I guarantee you at some point during the season, that's exactly how we'll wind up shooting a bird there.
Huh.
Maybe the bird was way out of range, and you couldn't hear him gobble when you went through the first time. Maybe he was coming in quiet. You know, whatever the reason, it is a awesome strategy. You know, guys will blow through a property or a place they have to hunt. Oh, didn't hear anything. I'm out of here. But they'll never come back to that spot. So we can only hunt till noon. So sometimes we check spots like three times a morning, and we'll always check from the same place we called the first time. Okay. And inevitably, it pays off.
Huh. That's cool. Why can you only hunt till noon? Is that a law?
I don't know. It's a ridiculous blue law thing. No, actually, it started way back when biologists, turkey biologists, said that they did not want hunters kicking hens off the nest during the spring season.
Okay, makes sense.
So they figured hens were out feeding and doing their stuff, and then they were sitting on eggs after that, and they didn't want you out in the woods disturbing the hens.
Okay.
It's been proven not to be true, and a lot of states in just the past few years have changed that law, but ours is not one of them. So we can only...
Got it.
So.
Man. That's interesting. And then when can you start hunting them again? You can't hunt them in the afternoon?
Cannot hunt them in the afternoon.
Oh, wow.
No, you're done at noon, and then you're headed back out to try to roost one for the next morning in the evening.
Got it. Okay. Be interesting.
Yeah. New York is 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and where we are in Mass, it's 12. And I think Vermont, New Hampshire is the same way. I don't think there's any... And I may be wrong about this, but I don't think there's any Northeast state where you can hunt hunt afternoons.
Interesting. I've never been there for the spring season, so.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. It was a different approach. I like the guys that don't give the same answers, you know. It's refreshing. Enjoy
Anytime.
Your work.
It's been great. It's been great.
Yeah. I'd like to have you back on. We'll talk about fall bird hunting.
So,
a little bit about that.
So, yeah. So there you hit it. And that, you know, you talk about spring turkey hunting being a passion. Fall turkey hunting is even more of a passion. And I used to have a turkey dog, right?
Which I never heard of. Which
we
crazy.
Can get into when we talk about it. So, you know, as dogs do, they live for 10 years or so. And in the years that I had him and hunted with him, my bow hunting for deer went right down the tubes because that's all I wanted to do was hunt fall turkeys with the dog. Fall turkey hunting, you know, a lot of guys are not into it because they don't think there's a dialogue, right? You hear a goblin bird in the spring and it's awesome and it's cool and all that, and it is. And they don't think turkeys do much vocalization in the fall, which is
untrue.
Absolutely
yeah.
not true. I mean, they can be even more vocal in the fall.
Yep, I've called them in the fall. I do that like lost hen yelp,
the kikis or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah, and that's always kind of worked for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a little bit of a different calling style, and you know, you're trying to it's a different mindset, but it's just as thrilling as the springtime is. So
yeah, cool. Well, awesome. I'll definitely have you back on for that. Probably, you know, later this summer before the fall season starts coming.
That'd be great.
Well, I want to thank you again for coming on and taking time out of your day.
Oh, thank you. One more thing before I go, okay?
What's that? Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
Here's what I'm real excited about. Outdoor life's been around since 1898, right? So, and we're kind of a trusted brand, and we do gear testing like nobody's business. We do gun tests and tackle tests and bow tests and all that sort of stuff. So, starting August 1st, we're going to be coming out with Outdoor Life branded gear, outdoor gear. The gear has actually been designed by the guys and gals and on the staff of Outdoor Life.
Cool.
So the first line of equipment will be base camp, so tents, sleeping bags, that sort of stuff, and
Nice.
all of it's designed to be upper end and wear well and stuff that you can buy once and it'll last you for years.
Nice.
So again, August 1st is when the line will be introduced, and we're really excited about that. So
Awesome. Has it got to be like your back country type backpack hunting or?
some of that, and some of it for car camping stuff, family
Truck
stuff,
type, yeah.
both. So there's a pretty extensive line of products coming out, and it's again, we're pumped about it, and hopefully it'll be hugely successful, and we're already planning next year's line of products. So
Nice.
if you go to outdoorlife.com, and as soon as the stuff is available, you'll see it. And again, we're excited about it, so check it out.
Awesome. Anything else where listeners could find out more about you or?
Well, my brain right now is at turkey camp since the season opens Monday,
Yeah.
and this is now Thursday, and I need to get to camp because I can't wait to hear some turkeys gobble.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm typically my stuff's on outdoorlife.com or in the magazine, and you can check it out, or Facebook or whatever. So I'm on
Cool.
Facebook as well. So
All right, well, very good. We'll talk to you soon and we'll get you back on. I'd like to hear how you did this season.
you will, John. Thank you.
All right.
All right, see you.